There it goes. We're going to try to show you the good in these poker chips. Now, here's the thing about the poker chips we learned last week when we did this. They make a lot of noise when they drop the ground, okay? So we want you to have them. We want you to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Come on, Dwayne made that joke earlier and people laughed. Okay, so it's not that funny. All right, so anyway, if you could take those poker chips and just kind of hang on to them for right now, try not to flip them and flop them and drop them on the ground, but just kind of hang on to those for just a little bit. Now, I know for some of you, you're like, okay, poker, gambling, church. Never raise your hand, honestly, if when you were growing up, you were told to have nothing to do with poker, poker equaled sin. Raise your hand. Any of you? See, maybe it's just a Southern thing, because in the South, I'll never forget the first time my dad, he became a Christian, was so excited about being a Christian, he just wanted to play cards, not poker, no gambling. We were going to like play some spades at church. And the church, so not everybody, but some of the people just started flipping out because as far as they were concerned, cards meant gambling, gambled meant sin, Christians don't sin, therefore we don't play poker. And so there was always this kind of tension with poker. Well, I got to be honest with you, I'm not a good gambler, okay? So don't come ask me to play poker with you. I probably wouldn't do it. I'm not that good at it. It's kind of one of those things where I lose interest in it. It's too easy for me to go all in, to be sitting at the poker table, and after about an hour and a half, I'm bored. Even though I've got a lot of money at stake, I would really start to gamble. I'd be like, you know what? I'm all in. Because I'm bored, I'm tired, I need to get out of there. It's not real fun. But real gambling, I'll tell you fun gambling I can get into. I don't know if you've ever seen, if you've ever been to many rodeos in your day, but the best kind of gambling is cowboy poker. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but they get out in the middle of a bull arena, and there'll be four or five guys get around a poker table, like a little card table, and they'll all just kind of sit down at their table, and they'll start playing poker. And now in the middle of the pile is X amount of money, maybe $1,000, maybe $100, maybe $2,000. Nevertheless, there's amount of money on the table there. They release the bull. The last guy at that table that grabs the money wins it. Okay, so you want to talk about action, not getting bored playing poker? These guys are there with a bull running at them, and I have seen guys stay there stone cold, and that bull will run through, and he will demolish the other four guys at the table, and he'll never move. He'll pick up the money and walk away. Now, okay, nothing against this World Series of Poker, but that's not real gambling. Real gambling is when you're gambling with your life. Well, when we're talking about playing poker today, that's what we're talking about. You want to go home and play some poker? We got some poker chips. You can use those. But today we want to talk about this idea of what does it mean to gamble? Now, going back to kind of real gambling, listen to this. There was a couple in Las Vegas. Husband just learned that he was going to lose his job. True story. And he's on his way home, and he grabs his wife. They go out to get some dinner. They stop at a casino, and it says they played a slot machine for a few moments, and they won $1 million. Seems pretty cool. Not bad, right? No lie. They went back 2 weeks later, played the same slot machine, $26 million they won. Okay? Also, there's another guy, Reno, Nevada, who had money. He was going to play the penny slots. He had $1. Or no, he had a buck and a half. $1 million payoff. That's 667% return on his investment. Listen to this. It doesn't always work that way. We know that. You know that Nevada, they live their life on the just in case. The whole city is built on the dream that there's just a chance I may win the big one. But let's face it. We know that the odds are pretty staggering. This is not going to happen. Somebody said this. They said that you're 121 times more likely to get killed, hit and killed by lightning than to win millions on gambling. 121 more times likely to get struck by lightning, which says this. You can feel pretty good the day that you got struck by lightning for the 121st time and was killed. At that moment, you can feel really good if you go to the casino that you're going to win. At that moment, you've defied all the odds. 121 times killed, and I guess the fact that you come back to life would have helped. But after 121 times, you can go and say, you know what, I'm going to go win millions. And I would say I'd put my money on you for that day. But we know that that's not the way it always works out. Today we're starting a series called Beyond Me. Specifically with today's lesson, today's topic is, it's take the gamble. But we're not asking you to go to Nevada and take all the money that you have, although some of you are dreaming about it. And we're not calling you to do that. If you don't do that, that's between you and you do whatever you need to do, and that's fine. But for us, what we're talking about here is our life. What are you doing with your life? What kind of gambles do you take with your life? We're not talking about gambles jumping out of an airplane. We're not talking about gambles sitting and playing cowboy poker, but with your life. We're going to go to a scripture here. If you want to get the Bibles on the pews, it's page 802. It's John 13. Jesus is about to totally redefine life for a group of 12 people. I hope by the end of today for us that it's redefining life for us. Because what he's about to do is say, let me tell you about gambling. This is Jesus' sermon on gambling. But it's not the sermon that you may have heard growing up, going to church, that gambling is wrong. Jesus is about to tell them the need to gamble. Let me give you some background. People would have a dinner party at their house. When they ate, it was pretty much on the floor. Now, understand this, that they walked around all day and they had their sandals on and it's hot and it's sweaty. And you know, when sweat and dirt mix, it's some kind of funky mud. And their feet are caked with it. Their toenails, it's all kind of peeling out of it. And you know that they didn't have pedicure, manicure in the day, which means you put dirt on nasty, funky looking feet, you get nastier, funkier looking feet. And so it's not a pretty sight. And so when you would go to sit down to eat, these nasty, funky feet are in your face. And so it was a custom of the day that they would have somebody come in and clean your feet. It's the least they could do. If you're inviting me to your house, you can at least make sure that your feet are not in my face all stinking. And so they would make sure that the feet would be washed. Because there again, they're reclining, they're down on the ground, as if they're going to eat on four sides of the table. So that means somebody's feet are in my face, and my feet are in somebody else's face as we are reclined to eat. And so Jesus finds himself in this situation with 12 people. Now understand the 12 people that he's got there. He's got with feet in their face. These are the top 12. These are the number one draft picks. These are the people that Jesus went to and said, follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. And they chose to follow Jesus. And he says, come with me, I'll make you fishers of men. And there they are, those 12, those top draft picks, the people that we would assume would be the most spiritual of the day. Imagine, Jesus' dirty feet are in your face. Judas's nasty, dirty feet are in your face. Peter's nasty, dirty feet are in your face. What are you going to do? It's almost as if they just looked at each other like, well, this is an odd, where's the servant? Is somebody going to come wash our feet? Oh, he's going to stand here? Dude, could you move your feet to the side a little bit? Seriously, somebody's going to come in a minute. And so there's all this talk going on. What are we going to do? You've got, on one hand, you've got these guys who want to eat dinner, but they don't want dirty feet in their face. On the other hand, they want to eat dinner, they don't want dirty feet in their face, but yet they're not willing to do anything about it. You can kind of see this one of them sitting there going, well, I would wash your feet, but that's really not my calling. I actually serve on the finance committee. I actually hold Jesus' money. And the other one sitting there thinking, well, you know, hey, I've washed feet in the past. I've done my time. It's your turn to wash feet. And then the other guy says, hey, you know what? It's not my gift. You know, I don't feel like it's my, I don't get fulfilled washing feet. So you got to think something like that's going through their head. Because if we put ourselves in that situation, you know they don't want it, but yet nobody is standing up to do anything. And it takes us all the way to the scripture where finally Jesus says, it's time to take the gamble. The most powerful man on earth, the one man that people had come to give their life to. It's interesting because about 2 days before this, these men here that said they would follow Jesus, they're having this weird conversation. The weird conversation, who's going to be the greatest? Who's going to be the chief priest? Because see, in their mind, they decided to follow Jesus because he was a man of power. Seems pretty easy, right? You see, Jesus is about to talk to them about taking the great gamble. As far as they're concerned, the gamble they just took was on Jesus. This man was a great man of great power, and we know that because they're sitting there arguing about who's going to be the chief, who's going to be his right-hand man, because they thought Jesus was going to be this ruler on earth. They didn't expect what's about to happen. They didn't expect that Jesus was about to do this. The Word of God says Jesus gets up. He got up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Awkward. I mean, do you feel the tension there? Somebody needs to wash feet. Somebody needs to wash feet. Who's going to wash the feet? Now, the one person they didn't think should wash the feet would be Jesus. He's the master. And he gets up. And all of a sudden, you're feeling a little awkward. You're feeling like a little ashamed. It's kind of like, you know, how your wife wants you to do something and you don't do it. And finally, she's like, I'll do it. Okay, you know, the baby's crying in the middle of the night. Some of us have been there, and the baby's crying. You're thinking, I don't want to get the baby. I already got the baby last night. And all of a sudden, she's like, fine, you know, I'll get it. And all of a sudden, you feel really bad. It's kind of like, you know, you get ready to go. You're going out to Walmart or something like that. And there's this lady walking up the door, and you don't think about holding the door open for her, but the guy in front of you does. And not only is that, but you walk through the door as he's holding it. And it's like, you know what, maybe I should get beyond me. Maybe I shouldn't live for me. And Jesus all of a sudden gets beyond himself. He gets up and says, fine, I'll do it, no big deal. And he begins to wash their feet. He's standing there. It says, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. He says, do you understand what I've done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, because that's what I am. But now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set an example that you should do this as I have done it for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed. Unapologetically, Jesus looks at him and he says, the life is about the towel. It's not about you. You thought you came to follow me because you thought I was going to be this great, big, powerful man. And all of a sudden, Jesus looks at him and says, no, I want you to wash feet. I don't need you to manage people. I don't need you to slap people around. I don't need you to be a boss. I don't need you to be a person of power. I need you to be able to wash dirty, stinking feet. I don't care if it's your talent. I don't care if you like it. That's what I've called you to do. And all of a sudden, everything flips upside down. Jesus called them to live something different. He called them to get beyond themselves. He called them to live what we're titling Beyond Me. He's not calling us to literally wash feet. Don't get me wrong. It's the metaphor. How many of you know that first phrase in the Rick Warren's book, 40 Days of Purpose? You remember what the first sentence said? It's not about you. Interesting enough, Rick Warren didn't come up with that statement. Rick Warren didn't dream that up because it's some great idea, although it is. God dreamed that up. God brings that up. And here in an instant, Jesus stands up before these guys who are sitting around wondering who's going to clean feet. And he says, I'll do it. You know why? Because it's not about me. And if anybody had the ability or had the reason, had the right to say, Peter, get up and wash my feet. Peter, go wash Judas's feet. It's David Clayton. He was the preacher at the first church I ever served. His kids would walk in the room and he would say, here, have my seat. Here, what do you want to watch? Not my dad. I walk in, he says, sit on the floor, boy. I didn't even have a choice to go watch another TV. I had to sit on the floor. I had to stay there. I had to be in the same room. And there was no serving. And Jesus says, it's not about you. You're not greater than your master. Your master's not greater than you. He says, I've come to give you this idea that to live beyond myself. So those guys sit there and think, what is this supposed to mean? Maybe the light would come on. Maybe that's why Jesus did it. For the light to come on to say, it's not about me. Can you say that with me this morning? It's not about me. Say it again. It's not about me. It's about the towel and the basin. That's why Jesus calls it. That's why we're calling it the great gamble today. See, to get beyond me, we've got to take this great gamble. You've got to take the gamble because that was what Jesus did that day. That was the poker. That's what it was. They're sitting around the table and Jesus takes his chips and he goes all in. He says, it's not about me, guys. It has nothing to do with my power. It has nothing to do with my esteem. It has everything to do with dirty feet. It has everything to do with serving people. And if that means I've got to go all in, I'm going all in. And so he went all in that day and he took the chance on serving people. Seems kind of odd that a God who people were expecting to come to be powerful. I don't know if you know that or not. But it's one reason why it was so hard for people to accept that Jesus was who he was because they thought he was going to be this great, powerful king to come and lead people. And so they thought he was going to sit high on a throne. And now he's down washing feet. So what is the great gamble? The great gamble is great because of a few things. Let me go through those. Number one, because of who we serve. See, what makes the gamble so great? What takes it from just a gamble to a great gamble is because of who you serve. What takes me from a great gamble of all in to just a gamble? It depends on the cards I have in my pocket, right, Mr. Frank? Some of you play poker. You know what it's like. And so you play and you got your penny ante, and even though it's penny ante, hey, it's still 100 pennies is a dollar, and so you go all in. It's a gamble, maybe, if you have three aces or two aces. But it's a great gamble if you don't have any aces. And so Jesus says it's a great gamble because of who you serve. I think that everybody in this room is willing to serve the right people. I think every one of us at any given time would serve. But in order to make the consistency raise, in order to be able to get 100% of this room to serve, I'm afraid sometimes it's about who we serve. The president, for instance. Let's say that next week we come in this room and I say, okay, guys, I need everybody next week all hands on deck. We've really got to get this place going. We need extra kids zone. We need to make sure before church this place gets vacuumed. We need to make sure that all the signs are out earlier. As a matter of fact, we need to make and put out more signs. We need to make sure the restrooms are cleaned and everything. We need to be prepared because the president, every living president, is going to be here next Sunday. And we need to get things ready because they don't need to sit on a dirty toilet. They need to make sure that the Bibles are lined up. We need to make sure that the stage is just right. We need to make sure that the preacher doesn't go long. And so we're all kind of dividing up and getting everything strategic. I wonder if that's what it would be like. Would all hands be on deck if we knew the president was going to come? Because the stakes? Because the people? But would we? What would it be like if next week I said, guys, we need all hands on deck. Herb Looney's coming. Some of you don't know who Herb Looney is. Herb Looney is a guy that shows up every single week at 7:30 in the morning. He doesn't have a kids. He's beyond his childbearing years. And he hangs up signs every single week. To say one of the greatest servants that New Life has to offer will be here next week. Everybody get ready. Everybody get things together. Want to be just right because Herb Looney's coming. I wonder how many of us it would be different. Now, honestly, realistically, think in your mind, would you? Because I'm going to stand before you and honestly say, I think if the president was coming for some weird reason, without even thinking about it, I probably would be more excited. I probably would make sure things are more prepared. But why is that? Maybe because it's easier. Maybe because it's just a gamble. Maybe because it's not a great gamble. Did you know this? President's Cup is a golf tournament. The top 10 golf players from the United States versus the top 10 golf players from the entire world all play over in Manassas about a month ago. And it's called the President's Cup. Did you know that people were actually paying $200 a person to go work? They actually paid to go work. So starting next week, we have a new kids zone policy. We feel like that maybe that would help. $200 a person, and we will let you serve in Kid Zone alongside Herb Looney. Understand where Jesus was setting. Understand who he just gambled on. He didn't gamble on the President of the United States. He didn't gamble on Herb Looney. He gambled on people that were flaky. As he's sitting around that table, let me tell you who he's thinking about. He was thinking about a man named Judas who he knew would betray him. He's thinking about a man named Peter who he knew would flat three times say, I don't know who that man is. I've never met him and would curse at people because they would accuse him of knowing Jesus. Jesus was sitting at the table with him. He's about to get up and take not a gamble, but a great gamble. And there was 10 other people there that he knew. And the moment Jesus needed them the most, we're going to flee. Now he knows that as he's sitting there, as he's smelling their feet, as he sees that what's going on in their head and the immaturity that's going on, he looks at them, the flaky ones, not the president, not Herb Looney, who will be there rain or shine, but people that he know will let him down. And he gets up and he washes their feet. It's not just a gamble. He took a big gamble on those guys. Jesus wasn't brought to this earth from their mind to wash feet, but he did it anyway. Second thing, it's also a great gamble. What makes it a great gamble is because not just who we serve, but when we serve. The time that we serve takes it from being just a gamble to a great gamble. So when do we serve? Look at Jesus' timing. Notice his timing with that towel. Notice that Jesus must have had so much on his mind. Because understand this, when they get it from that table, he's about to go be arrested. He knows for the next couple of days he's going to die. He knows he's about to be murdered. Now think about this for just a minute. In one of the most depressing times of his life, as he's sitting there looking in the eyes of people that are going to be flaky, they're going to leave him. He knows he's about to have a crown of thorns put on his head. He knows he's about to be beaten and then put on a cross and suffocated to death. He knows it's about to happen. Think about his mental psychological state for just a minute. If anything, he has reason to go, guys, I'm about to die. Could you at least wash my feet? Because you know, men like I do, it's my birthday, honey. Do I really have to wash dishes today? I've got an excuse. Come on, something. It's a big day today. And so on our birthday, we know we don't have to do housework. And when it's our birthday, some of us don't even go to work. And when it's anniversary, when it's a special day for us, sometimes we get special treatment. You would think his last meal would be special treatment, that he wouldn't have to wash their feet. But that's what made it the great gamble. Is because in a moment which I got to think, I'm laying there. And how could I even have the mindset, first of all, to even look at these guys and say, guys, it's been fun. I'd be like, I couldn't even talk. I'd be crying. I'd be like, and I would, you know what it's like when you try to talk, but you're in that emotional crying period and nothing comes out and you just cry and it gets louder and louder. That would be me. I wouldn't even be able to eat. I wouldn't even have the stomach to eat. But somehow, Jesus took the great gamble. All of us have difficult lives. Welcome to Nova. A bunch of us travel many distances and we work many, many hours. And some of us have lost jobs and we've lost spouses and we've got a lot of things going on inside our heads. We've got a lot of psychological, a lot of emotional things going. We got things are stretching us from right to left, from the time you get up to the time you go to bed. We are flat out maxed. Can we all agree to that? But maybe Jesus' philosophy trumps that. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's something to taking the gamble in those times. You see, what makes it a gamble? What makes it a great gamble isn't that. You see, listen here. If I could sit here and I could gamble $5, I could probably even gamble $500, and it wouldn't bother me a bit if I'm Bill Gates. If it means nothing, it's not a gamble. But you see, what makes it the great gamble is this is all I have. I have nothing left. And what makes the great gamble, what Jesus, I believe, is calling us to out of this little illustration is not only the who, but when the chips are down, when it's your last chip, can you hold that chip in your hand? Can you just feel that chip? Because for many of us, if this chip represents our life, this is all I got. And if I hear you right, Mike, what you're saying is you want me to play this one. And let me respond to that. Say, no, if you hear me right, what you heard me say was Jesus played that one. And if somehow, if the God I came to serve, I came to live for, I came to search out, if he could do it, maybe there's some reason why I should play my last chip. But let's be honest. There's one more, and it's when we say, okay, but why? Just because Jesus did it, but why should I do it? Why should I take the gamble? Why should I live beyond me? Let me tell you, number one reason. Let me give you three reasons why. Number one, out of love. It's interesting how the story is set up. In the second half of verse 1, it says this, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. Let me say that again. He now needed to show them the full extent of his love. You would think that they would already know how he felt. They've seen the man walk on water. They've seen him raise dead people from the grave. They've seen him look at people after, in one of the hardest times of his life. They've seen him look at people and say, come to me, let me teach you. There's no way there's no way they should have ever doubted his love. But for some reason, in this last dinner, he felt the need to go a little bit deeper. He felt the need to take not just a gamble, but a great gamble. Why? He wanted them to see the full extent of his love. Here's what I'm saying. The reason is the who is fine. The when is fine. But the why. I take that great gamble. It's not about me. The life I hold in my hand is not about me. I take that great gamble because I love people. But because by placing my chips on the table, somebody's life will be affected. Somebody's life will be bettered. And that's why I take my gamble. Why did Jesus wash the feet? It wasn't just a dedication to principle. It wasn't just out of obligation. It wasn't because God says, if you don't do it, you don't get any supper tonight. Now you get down there and you wash those people's feet and then you come home with me. It wasn't because of that. It was because you pure loved people. He needed to show them that. In New Life, we say this. We exist to guide people into a growing relationship with Jesus. We exist to help people experience God's love and express God's love. And some people, many of you are here because you say, I saw that. I saw you expressing God, and I want to be a part of that. And here's what we say at New Life. If you want to be a part of that, what we're saying, the best way to be a part of that is to do it, to serve. Now, understand this. Let me make it very clear. We are not talking about serving at New Life. What I'm talking about today is not coming to Kids Zone. It's not helping set up. Those are great tangible ways. But what we're talking about today is holding a door open for somebody. What we're talking about today is listening to somebody. What we're talking about today is when you're at your workplace, being beyond yourself to be able to put up with the boss who is a flat jerk. It's able to go out and to interact with people that don't deserve the love and give it to them anyway. That's what we're talking about today. We're talking about getting beyond myself in whatever area I'm in, be it at New Life, at home, or in the workplace. It's being beyond me and serving my last card, regardless of how tired I am. I watch my wife night in and night out. About 10:30 at night, I'm dead tired, I'm ready to go to sleep, and she gets up and she goes, and she puts a load of clothes in the laundry, and she puts the dishes away. Not that much stuff. And I think, can't you just do it tomorrow? Is it really that big a deal? Now, for her, it's like it just piles up tomorrow. For me, she has nothing else. She's dead tired, and she has to do it because her lazy husband didn't get up and do it for her, or because the family needs it. Because when they get up, she sees that when the house is clean, whenever things are better around there for us and for our family, it works better. So she takes her last chip, and she plays it. She plays it all day long. And she continues to give, and she continues to give, and she never stops. Another reason why we take the great gamble is because of a promised blessing. It's because of a blessing. It's because God says, I'll bless you. It's because Jesus comes to this earth one day, and he says, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come to give you life to the fullest. You see, when God, he says, in going back to the dinner table scene at the end of it, when he's talking to him, he says, if you do this, he says, now you know, but if you do it, you'll be blessed. He says, I'm not just asking you to play. It's the cool thing about God. He never gives us a command. He never tells us to do anything that he doesn't say, and I'll bless you in return. He says, if you will play that last chip, if you'll just trust me on this, I don't care how tired you are, if you see a need, if you'll only fulfill it, if you'll get beyond yourself, if you'll take the great gamble, if you'll throw your chip down, God says, I'll bless you. And it's one of those things where we say, don't test God. This is the one moment where God says, go ahead, I dare you. Make a gamble. Not just a gamble, make a great gamble. Toss your chip down, see if I don't bless you. I told you I would, and I will. We define blessing sometimes as, oh, God did something nice for me today. Hooray, God. But I'm telling you, it's bigger than that. It's about a life that is full, about a life that is meaningful. And the last reason why we take that great gamble is because sometimes it just needs to be done. Jesus washed the feet because it just needed to be done. It didn't need any more reason than that. Yeah, I love you guys. Yeah, God's going to bless me. But your feet stink. Your feet are nasty. Your feet are grimy. They need to be washed. And so Jesus washed their feet. Because it needed to be done. Chuck Duffield shows up here every single week. Chuck Duffield shows up every single week. On Saturday, he puts the signs out. He gets up at 7 o'clock on Sunday mornings, his day off, and he pulls up a trailer. He opens that trailer up, and he unloads that trailer. When he unloads that trailer, he sets up frontline. When he's done setting up frontline, he starts to greet people. When he's done greeting people, he prepares, and he comes in here, and he hands out communion. When communion is done, he hands out the money. When the money's done, he puts it in a box. He locks the box. When the box is locked, he goes out there. He greets people as they leave. When everything's done, Chuck Duffield helps pack everything up. Now, he doesn't do it all by himself, but understand that he does a lot of this by himself, and he starts to pack it all up. When he gets it packed up, he helps wheel it into a trailer. Once it's in the trailer, he pulls the trailer up, he goes and he puts the trailer up. He goes out to eat. About 2 o'clock, he comes back and he gets the signs. He puts the signs and he comes back and he goes home and he goes to bed. Or at least takes a break. You know why Chuck does that? And by the way, before Chuck did that, you know one of the first services Chuck did at New Life was to sit in a nursery and bounce nasty, poopy diapers around. Do you think for some reason that Chuck had this great gift to change diapers and this great passion to smell poop and diapers? Let me tell you, Chuck does it because it needed to be done. If you were to go ask Chuck, what do you want to do? Chuck would say, you know what, honestly, I'd like to have breakfast with McKay at least 2 Sunday mornings a month. That's what I'd like to do. But this needs to be done. He says, I don't think it'll be forever. I think one day we'll get to do that. But for now, this needs to be done. This is not about Chuck Duffield. This is not about me saying, see there, you need to come serve. There's a need. But this is about me saying there's a need and there's a man who did it. And that's the mindset. And oh my goodness, the blessings. I believe when we get to heaven and we look and say, whose great big mansion is that? It's going to say Chuck Duffield's house. Because God's going to bless him that big. It's going to be the biggest mansion on the biggest hill. It's not all about blessings. But he will be blessed. It's about Carl who comes every single week. And in terms of what sets up here, he does the same thing every week. And by the way, Carl drives from the other end of Fairfax every single week to be here. When there are two New Life churches he could be at a lot closer, he comes here to be with us because he loves us and because it needs to be done here. So what is the great gamble? The great gamble is our life. And you hold that chip in your hand, and I tell you that you are in the game. Whether you like gambling or not, you are sitting right now at the poker table. So you've only got two choices with this chip. You can put it in your pocket and you can walk away and you can show all your friends that you won some money and that you've got a good life. You see, we can go and we can pursue this chip for our own selves. We can be like Solomon, a man who had everything in the world, a man who had kings come before him. Kings came before him and built great empires. And when Solomon came around, he wanted more. And he started building more parks, more institutions. He started building everything for him. And the Word of God in Ecclesiastes, we won't get there right now, continues to talk about everything that Solomon built for himself and all the great things. And it goes down into Ecclesiastes 2, verse 11. It says, "Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun." He said, "I had it. All. I had every maid a man could want." He says, "You know what it's like to go into Walmart and say and get everything you want?" He said, "I'd go in, I'd just buy Walmart." "You know what it's like to say, I want this all-star player?" Or, "You know what it's like to say, I want to go watch a baseball game?" Someone say, "I went and bought the team." Everything that we want, he bought what owned the thing that we want. He had it all. And he says, but at the end of the day, it was all meaningless. Solomon decided he would gamble with his last chip. But he would play it on himself and not other people. See, and where I'm not saying you can't have things. I'm not saying you don't go buy and get a nice, cool car. But what we're saying is your chip, your life, where do you play it? Do you play it on yourself or do you play it beyond me? The Bible makes it clear, very clear. He says, humble yourselves and God will lift you up. So let me challenge you this morning with your chip in your hand. What are you going to do with it? Where are you going to play this? On me? Or beyond me? Are you going to play it when you're tired? Are you going to play it whenever people don't deserve it? Are you going to play it when dirty people's feet are in your face and somebody else should be doing it? When, where, and on who are you going to play this chip? Are you going to take the gamble? Challenge you maybe this week. Maybe take a day. Live for yourself. Everything. Open no doors. Give nothing to anybody. When you eat your hamburger in front of your kids at night, tell them how great it is and give them nothing. I challenge you that you make them sleep on the floor while you sleep on your bed. I challenge you to live as greatly, as much like a king as you can, and as much as possible, whenever possible, everybody around you, see if you can make sure they don't live as good as you. Try that. And the next day, let them sleep in your bed. Open up their doors. Be nice to them when they don't deserve it. What would life be like? I don't really want you to take that gamble. I think that gamble is more of a sin. But let me challenge you to consider what it would be like if you could just live beyond me. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for today. God, I thank you for...